Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to yet another edition of the Backboard Basics podcast, as we are now less than 2 weeks away from the NBA draft. Maybe less than 1 week away if you're like a super procrastinator. But depending on when you listen to this, we're less than 2 weeks away from the NBA draft. What is your excitement level at now, Mr. Nepik?
We're 2 weeks away about, so I'll say 8. Because I'll go up one notch next week, one notch week of.
Don't give away all of our future podcasts just yet.
Maybe.
That is Nick Nepik. You can find him, the master of intrigue, on Twitter at Nick Nepik. I am Kevin Hagland. You can find me on Twitter at OhThankKevin. And a little bit of intrigue is off the board as we go into the draft because, spoiler alert, DeAndre Ayton told us all he's going number one. Now, couple of questions about that. Do you think he has inside knowledge because they just told him, yeah, you're awesome, we're going to take you number one? Is this just the bravado of somebody who most people think should go number one? Or he just likes to ruin people's days with spoiler alerts?
I think
he didn't say spoiler alert before, though.
It is probably the first one.
Like, okay.
He's probably been told, like, hey, we're going to take you number one. Like,
would you believe that if you were a player?
I'm probably not, just because I'm usually skeptical.
Right.
But, like, it's, look at it this way. Like, a lot of these guys feel like, or it seems like they could think they can trust teams because, you know, see guys not working out at the combine, not competing in 5-on-5 because they got a promise from someone. So it's just, maybe it's just a like similar instance, just obviously much higher magnitude because it's the number one pick.
So, and then I guess the other question that goes along with it, do you think that he is the deserved number one pick? Because I feel like he has since, January, give or take, kind of ascended to the top of the board. It seems like he stayed there. He hasn't had any missteps that would lead me to believe that he would fall from number one. But I also know how much we like Luka. So do you think he's a deserved number one pick?
Yeah, I do. I think I have him ranked first on my board. I have Doncic second. I've said this before. If you have Doncic 1, Ayton 2, I'm not mad at you. But I think Ayton is the deserved number one pick. I think the fit in Phoenix is really good. And, they've scouted him more than anyone, probably being right in their backyard.
Right.
So I'm totally cool with it. And if it's nothing other than confidence by Ayton, like let's just say he hasn't been told anything and he's just playing the confidence card.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I'm fine with that too. Like, why not? You know, you think you're the best player. Why don't you act like it? That's fine with me.
Especially since I cannot envision a scenario which he falls below number two. That'd be different if, like, when I was not a fan when Michael Porter Jr. was like, I'm the best player in this draft. And I was like, okay. And so, I mean, he could fall. Like, I could easily see him fall into 10, 11, 12, somewhere around there. But there is no way that Ayton falls anywhere below 2.
Right.
And if your floor is the number 2 pick, well, then hell yeah, I'm going to be like, I'm the number 1 pick,
baby.
You got
a 50-50 shot.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
So we've talked plenty about Luka Doncic. And I wanted to give the opportunity, because I know you've been scouting some other international players, though clearly no one has anywhere in the same universe of buzz as the buzz that's been created by Luka coming out of Real Madrid, the basketball team, not the soccer team. And so what do we got on the international front to look out for besides Luka?
Well, there's more than this, but I have four guys written down. I wrote something on them. You can find it on my Twitter or at the 105throughthefan.com on the Ooh. Site there. But these are four guys that I really like. One of them we've talked about before, and then the other three are names you might have heard, might not. So we'll start with the one we have talked about before, and that's Janin Musa.
Okay.
He is from Bosnia, but he played for Cedevita in Croatia, and they just won the Croatian title, the Croatian League title.
You wanted to maybe say Croatian Cup, didn't you? I could tell.
No, I just kind of misspoke, but Croatian Cup, they won that.
I think
it was last week. He finished with 21 points in that game. He has started to slide a little bit, at least in mock drafts, into the late first, maybe even early second. I know there were some teams skeptical about his back, that he had some sort of back injury, but he was at the there was a NBA Global Camp in Italy last week, and he was at that, got cleared by NBA doctors. All is good there. So who knows if he continues to stay in that late first, early second, but he's a go-to scorer. He can score in multiple ways, was the main one of the main offensive threats for that team. I think if we're looking from a Mavs perspective, if he's starting to slide, I would not mind him at 33, although, of course, my first choice is Grayson Allen there.
Yes, but as we all know.
He's a go-to scorer. He has great instincts. He doesn't lack confidence. He needs to be a bit more consistent, like he's pretty streaky. And then defensively, I worry where he will defend. You know, he's not the strongest guy, and is he the most athletic to switch all the time? We'll see. But he'll need to develop some consistency there, to really stick, and he'll also need to just learn to be the secondary guy because he's, I think, gotten used to being the main guy for Cedevita in Croatia. So he's my first one on this list and probably my favorite one as well.
Okay, and so are you surprised then from that perspective that he slid a little bit or?
Maybe not, because I think part of it is due to other guys rising
More than him falling?
Right, okay. And maybe part of it is him, you know, the back, I think, certainly had something to do with it. But other guys have started to rise up, especially internationally. The next guy on the list is someone that's really jumped, I feel like, in the last 2 to 3 weeks. And that's, and some of these names I might not get completely right, but this is Eli Okobo.
I think
that's how you say it. He plays in France, or did play in France. Super quick ball handler, scores off the dribble. He's only 6'2", 180, so he's kind of small. But really
isn't that interesting real quick, like, that 6'2 is considered tiny for the point guard? I used to feel like if you hit 6 foot, like, you're pretty good.
In normal life, 6'2 is really tall.
Man, I know.
Like, you see somebody who's 6'5", and you're like, man, that guy's huge. And, like, 6'2", you're like, okay, he's tall. But if I see, like, in someone who's 6'5", I'm like, they're a giant.
And as we've established, normal life does not apply to the NBA draft, where the disgusting Jonte Porter was told to go away with his 13% or whatever body fat, which is... That's an insanely low amount. They're like, you're gross. You need to go away. So, yeah, if you're 6'2", you're gross and tiny. You need to grow.
But he's a scoring guard. He needs to improve decision-making, and I think that's something that a lot of, whether college or, you know, professional overseas point guards who are big-time scorers, they're relied on a lot. I think most of them could live to make better decisions just because they're so used to being the guy. They want to score. They want to put the ball in the basket. But I've seen his name thrown around as a sleeper for could be the best point guard in this class.
Oh, come on now. And Colin Sexton.
I'm going to go Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Okay. But. Well, what's led to his rise then? Because we talked about, you know, the last one kind of falling more, other people rising more than him falling. But in this instance, what's led to the jump from the kid from France?
He had a 40-point game not that long ago. And so it's all, you know, the what have you done for me lately kind of thing. That might have something to do with it. But just his quickness, I mean, his attacking ability has really started to stand out when you combine that with he's had some big scoring games. So I think that's part of it.
All right, so we got two down, two to go.
Third on this list is...
And are these, like, listed in order of kind of where you think they'll go, or is this just your personal preference?
I'll say, yeah. I mean, I didn't... When I wrote this, I don't think I planned it that way, but I'm pretty confident that this is how it would go. Now, Okobo might go above Jean and Musa now.
After the
two weeks ago or whenever it was that I wrote this, I think it was still pretty standard. But the last two guys, or the other two on this list, are very much draft and stash type talents. Like they're going to take time to develop. They're going to need more time than the other two to contribute at a high level for an NBA team. But third on this list is Isaac Bonga from Germany. He plays for the Frankfurt Skyliners, which is a pretty cool
name.
That's
an awesome name.
6'9", long arm wing. So position of need for a lot of teams. He has length. He brings ball handling. So when I see long ball handlers, I think, man, the NBA Finals, the Cavs had LeBron, and that was pretty much it. Then they bring Rodney Hood in,
and
he's able to create some. So you want more
creators. He finally got a shot.
You want more ball handlers. He plays a premium position. We've talked about this a lot of times. Wings are at a premium in today's league. He's really young, and he needs to improve overall scoring, but I really think he'd be like a playmaking forward in the future. There just needs to be plenty of growth there because he's really young, has a lot of raw abilities that need to be kind of coached up.
Okay, can you tell me any more about that? Because on the surface, a young, tall, huge wingspanned player sounds great. Tell me more about the downside then.
Yeah, just,
or the maybe doesn't develop side.
Yeah, just the scoring consistencies or lack of scoring consistencies, I guess, is what you'd say. But just, combined that with playing, sparingly, not necessarily, I guess not sparingly, but just wasn't a huge piece in Europe as far as everyone had to, know who he was. And I feel like, and maybe this is just me, but Luka Doncic, for example, dominated at Real Madrid and more than any other teenager ever. And people are still skeptical of him.
Do you think that's necessary then to dominate? And if you're just
my point was this, Luka Doncic was the best player overseas we've ever seen. And people are still skeptical. And when a player is not as dominant, the skepticism is even more. And so maybe that's, part of me is taking some of that. Is that natural European skepticism with these players. But especially guys that are young that just look really raw. So as far as, maybe their ball handling isn't tight enough. Maybe he's not super physical. That's something with Bonga. That's something you can point to is physicality and rebounding. That just from a young player, you don't see maybe the effort 100% of the time in those areas.
So if you're young and really raw at Michigan State, you could go in the top three. But if you're young and really raw,
I would disagree.
Over Europe,
I would disagree. Though I think you're throwing shade at Jaren Jackson.
No, not shade. It's just a comparison. Would you dispute that Jaren Jackson is raw?
Yes, I would say he's not nearly as raw as Isaac Bonga is.
Okay,
he is a shot blocker. I mean, he does a lot more. Bonga is good in areas and has the upside, but Jackson does more than we've seen from some of these younger guys in Europe.
Okay, who's the last international prospect on the list, and who would you compare them to so I can throw shade at them next?
I will no longer let you throw shade at anyone that I bring up.
It was just a statement. But it wasn't necessarily meant to knock Jaren Jackson.
This one, I really don't know how to say his name, so I really apologize for this.
I look forward to this then.
Rodions, Rodions.
Okay.
Crux.
Oh.
Crucs.
Sure.
He played for Barcelona 2, so the lower level Barcelona.
Wow. And he makes the cut.
Well, his situation is weird. So he was playing last year into the draft process, decided to go back, and then had there was a weird coaching situation. I don't know. He didn't play a lot this year, but NBA executives and teams seem to really like him. He's 6'10", and he's a shooter. And, it's just a weird situation with him. I've barely seen any of him play because of the situation, lack of playing
NBA
time.
The NBA is enamored with him nonetheless.
Yeah, they like, the wing. They like size. They like the athleticism, the shooting ability. And combine all that together with, premium position, you want wings, then he's going to have a chance. He might not get drafted. I think he'll be a second-round pick. But I think a team will look at him and say, we can pick him now and put him in, two-way contract. Two-way contracts, I think, give teams a lot of opportunity. Like, they know they can take a guy and he can play in the G League. And if your team's not going to be very good, maybe he comes up and gets an NBA time, or he just spends a lot of time in the G League. Like, those two-way contracts give you some flexibility. But he's an interesting one just because he didn't play a lot. He was in the process last year and, you know, like all those guys, learned what he needed to do, but then just didn't play a lot, whether it was coaching or whatever the issue was within the organization. And now he's re-entering that process, and I assume he does not go back and play overseas again.
How do you feel as a general second-round philosophy about the draft and stash versus, you know, picking up a Grayson Allen or a Mo Wagner or whoever the college player of choice would be?
So I probably would lean towards the college player. The guy,
even if Grayson Allen was out of the equation.
Yes.
Okay.
But I mean, he sweetens the deal there.
Sure.
And this also probably goes more to, I've seen a lot more of these guys play. Whether that's fairly or unfairly, that has to be part of it. You know, I've seen, even if it's not Grayson Allen, let's look at a guy like Devontae Graham, another player who's fighting for draft position to get drafted. I'm probably going to go with Devontae Graham because I've watched him play in Final Fours. I've watched him play in NCAA tournaments and all of these things. And I haven't seen these European guys play much, if at all, especially not in person. Like, I've never been over there. But, like, tape access is limited, especially for, you know, someone like, you know, me, who's not an NBA executive.
Right.
And so just naturally, I think I'd gravitate towards a guy I've seen more of.
Plus, do you ever feel like you don't know the ebbs and flows of their career and how they deal with adversity and everything like that? With, like, somebody like DiVincenzo, I know how he deals with adversity because we had the whole to do with his tweets and everything like that. So you can see firsthand and you can hear firsthand how they deal with adversity on and off the court. Whereas with some of the Euro players, like, sure, I can see how you're doing in the Croatian Cup or whatever, but I don't know the backstory of the ups and downs with your career. And I wonder if that makes a difference as well.
Yeah, I think that has something to do with it. You know, we've seen a lot of big time European players, and I guess we've seen the same with college, but to a different extent. It's almost like there's this mystery, right? Like, ooh, like a European.
Sure.
Like, and so we put these expectations on them a lot of times unfairly, and then they kind of flame out. With these college players, like Jimmer Fredette's a good example. You know, he was the best player in college and then was a lottery pick, and now's killing it in China.
So, man, he dominates the Chinese
he's
league.
Making a lot of money. Like, good for him. They love him there.
Is he really?
Yeah, he makes a lot of money. Like, the fans love him. I think he's got a shoe there. All this stuff.
Oh. Is it called the Jimmer?
I hope so. Fun fact, my fantasy, when I used to play fantasy sports, I don't play them anymore.
Sure.
My team was always called Jimmer Time because I loved Jimmer Fredette.
That is a fun fact,
but that's neither here nor there. But, like, going back to Jimmer, he flamed out, but there wasn't this, like, outrage that there is when a European player who gets this hype when they flame out. Like, there's this huge outrage, like, another European guy flames out, we can't take him anymore. But then, like, Jimmer Fredette's a lottery pick and turns into nothing, and Nick Stauskas is a lottery pick, and he's floated around to every team in the league, it feels like.
You know, I think everyone outraged themselves to the max with Adam Morrison.
Yeah.
Right? And they're like, oh my God, you stupid crying kid, and, like, they lost their mind about him, and then after that, they're like, okay, we're good. So now, you go ahead and you can be terrible and we'll be fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Nick, I have some terrible news for you. I know you put together your big board with all 300 of the prospects for the NBA draft, but unfortunately, it looks like we're not going to have time to get to all 300 of them before the draft. I'm very sorry.
We'll put it on pause till the next draft.
Okay.
We'll start with this one and then we'll get into the next one.
Okay. Yeah, we'll do a retroactive preview of the draft that's passed. And we're like, I know it didn't get taken, but here's pick 70 through 100.
And it's not like this is really happening right now anyway.
All right. Settle down, Lonnie Walker.
To go back to a previous podcast.
Man, you better be ready when the Mavericks pick up Kenneth Faried's contract so they get the number 14 pick and they get Lonnie Walker If you interview him, we better ask that question.
Oh, I will 100% ask that question.
How are you feeling right now? Does it really matter?
How
he's like, no.
Like right now or in the other universe that's I'm existing in?
I really hope that we take him now. I really hope that we make that move.
That would be amazing.
All right. So I kind of wanted to sort of take a look at a few of your theoretically second-rounded graded guys. Like, I know you've got 10 rounds of guys ready to go. But for the second round, the guys who were originally sort of on your big board, 31 through 60, instead of going through the whole list, maybe we should just kind of spotlight how many ever of them that you like and go from there.
So one that I think we've talked about him, and I mean, we've done quite a few of these, but that I think is the most interesting because of the hype that he had last year, is Hamadou Diallo.
I think
the athleticism, the defense, the energy in the second round, you could get a really good player there. And interestingly, he was a first round pick. Like, he was a lock first round pick. At least that's what everyone was saying before he decided to go back to school. And now he's hopefully a mid second round pick and a guy that plays the defense, that's great in transition, that really struggled in half-court offense, like in any organized offensive set, really.
Yeah.
But seemingly a great kid, like has all the athleticism, you know, high-flying dunks. I think he could be a really great value piece in the second round. He's one of my favorite, I guess, late on the board or, you know, lower-ranked guys, so to speak.
And you just mentioned a quality that's not necessarily in abundance with this draft class, though. You could probably say that about the last few and probably the rest of them from here until the end of time. He's already an adept defender. Like, but do you think he could be ready to defend at the NBA level now? I know they're not the same player by any means, but one of the discussions that we've continually had surrounding Mo Bamba is even if his offense is slow to develop or it never develops how you want, you already know that he can play defense at an NBA level. Do you feel comfortable that whether it's this year or really quickly, Diallo would be able to play NBA defense, putting aside his offense?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to shut anyone down, but I think he could be a productive NBA defender. You know, he's long. He's also blocked shots from a, you know, forward, you know, guard position, wherever you put him. And that's a quality that I think a lot of young players don't really have. He needs to stay focused off the ball, like on the ball defending is where he makes his money, especially at Kentucky. And
right.
I shouldn't say that. They don't pay their players.
Never.
The boosters pay the players.
Yeah, just because their coach has had to leave his last two spots in disgrace, that doesn't mean the exact same thing is going to happen.
But
and then
yeah,
he's throwing shade at Coach K about recruiting. Shut the hell up,
that
dude.
That could be an off-season podcast. Yeah. But
I'm in on that podcast. Of all the 30 for 30s in season 3 that I haven't watched, the only one is one and done one and not done or whatever the Calipari one is.
I actually liked it. Like, I thought it was really interesting. Yeah.
Didn't watch it because I think he's a scumbag.
Defensively, that's where he's, you know, going to stand out. Energy, defense, you know, shot blocking, transition, things like that. But his jumper looks bad. He's bad at the free throw line. Not super effective if he's not dunking the ball. So, like, finishing in the lane, you know, contested layups, changing directions, things like that. So his offense leaves a lot to be desired. Like I said, in situations where they're in sets, like where he's not running the floor, catching alley-oops, dunking, things like that, that's where he struggles. His decision-making, not great when he's asked to be the lead guard or if he's handling the ball. But Hamadou Diallo's athleticism and energy, I think if you can tap something out of that offensive game, then he's going to be a great value pick in the 30s.
All right. Man, that's interesting right there. I think I would be pretty on board with that prospect as well. Although you'd have to give up on your Grayson Allen dreams, so I'll say probably not for the Mavericks. All right, who's next in the mix there?
So the next one in the second round that I really like is, I guess there's similarity, but also very different in the reason why I think they could be successful. It's Javon Carter from West Virginia.
Okay.
If you have seen Javon Carter, he just finished his senior season, so he's older, 22 probably.
Gross.
He looks like he's like 35. I mean, he is like a grown man. But he is the tenacious, like, I don't give an F defender, like, going to get in your face, shut down Trae Young. I mean, just at the combine, for example, it was 5-on-5, and most of these guys are, I would say, are not taking it as seriously as they could. And he was,
or
just,
as seriously as him, because yeah, he knows he probably
was
needed
just
to
shutting people down. And he is the, I think it's either him or Kyrie Thomas who's the best on the ball defender
okay.
in this class. And Carter
and Kyrie Thomas is he's pretty well up
yeah,
there.
Yeah, and for different reasons. Like Thomas is long, and while he plays with energy, like I'm not discounting that. Javon Carter just works, and maybe that's playing for Bob Huggins. Like you learn to play that way, but his relentless, energetic defending will find him, you know, a role somewhere, whether, you know, down the road or right away. And he shoots threes well enough, I think, to contribute offensively. Whereas Diallo, you know, you might put him out there, but you're not expecting much offensively. Javon Carter can at least shoot threes. Like, he's not an attacker. He's not going to attack and you know, finish around the basket. But he's going to shoot threes. And something that I really like about him, and not just him, but a lot of any player who's been in this spot, is he wasn't recruited much out of high school. And he became one of the best players on West Virginia's team. He was a leader. He defended, like he did the dirty work. And he has that leadership quality. And I know that's like a cliche that people throw around. Oh, he's a leader or whatever.
Right.
But Javon Carter really is that. And I think there's value in that. He was the leader on that West Virginia team. And he brings, like I said, defense and the shooting. You know, if you can just spot up shoot, it does wonders for keeping you on the floor as a young player. Like, if you defend, great. But if we can't leave you on the floor for offense, why would we put you out there? And Javon Carter, he does that, and it's going to help him a lot.
Is Carter a player that you could see making a decent impact with an elite team that
yeah,
needs
like,
a dirty
so
work
similar
guy?
Similar to, like, Jordan Bell. Like
okay.
For the Warriors, I know they're, the, like, the greatest team ever, so it's obviously different. But Jordan Bell was a second-round pick, like, 38. The Bulls basically gave that pick away.
Yeah, I
remember
that.
And now Jordan
that.
Bell's contributing in the finals. Like, if you have strong traits and you go to a good team, you can find a spot to succeed, especially like a like an 8-seed team, but a top 5-seed. And it, the Warriors, I think anybody could play well there.
Sure.
But Jordan Bell really, like, he catches lobs, he rebounds, and plays some defense down low. Javon Carter, he can defend on the perimeter, shoot some threes. Put him on a team that, I don't know, like, let's just say, I'll throw one out, like the Jazz. You know, a really good team. They just need some pieces. He could help them. I'm not saying that's where he's going to go, but just if you put him on a team that's already successful, I think he'll really stand out, similar to like Jordan Bell.
Wow. Okay. Fascinating. Who's next up on
last
our list?
Last on the list.
And by the way, real quick, going back a quick step, is this a projected second rounder? Like a mid second rounder?
Yeah. Oh, the last or yeah. all of them? Or all of them? I think are second round picks. I think Diallo will be the highest. Javon Carter, then next, and then this last one.
Okay.
End of the second round. And this is a small school guy, Missouri State, Elise Johnson. He's a power forward, 6'8", 217. And he was asked to play center in college, so his tape is, like,
Whoa.
Weird. Because he played at a small school. You're 6'8", well, we might as well put you down low.
Right.
And that's, you know, so that's sort of where his tape is kind of hard to watch. He was often matched up against big guys where he kind of got pushed around. You know, he's 6'8 in the 200, you know, 6'8, 217. So he's a skinnier guy.
Yeah, it seems light.
But he's not going to play there in the NBA. He's again, there's a common theme here. These late round guys all play defense. Whereas what's funny, the top guys are elite offensively.
Yeah.
And you're hoping, like DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley, you're hoping they can be good defensively. These guys,
you don't describe the like secondary qualities of them either. You like with the top guys, nobody says about DeAndre Ayton, oh, he's so scrappy. And like, I feel
right.
like these types of words are coming up a lot. Like you said, you know, hard worker, leader, all the tenacious. Like, I feel like these secondary descriptors come up a lot more.
Yeah.
Like, they're the maybe not as attractive person, and you
right.
have to hype up their personality. That's what we're doing right
a
now,
a few
right?
drinks and a 5 becomes a 7 or something like
wow.
that.
Wow!
I Man, I shouldn't say that.
Well, that Colangelo. Was, so, yeah.
Oh, we could talk about that sometime.
Yeah.
But yeah, Elise Johnson. So he's a power forward, but what I like about him is he grew up playing point guard, so he can handle the ball really well. So think grab a rebound, run
okay.
the floor. you can kind of use him as a secondary ball handler. Like if he's on the, you know, the NBA is transitioning or maybe already has, you want as many ball handlers on the floor as you can, and he's one of those guys. His shooting is okay. It's a little streaky. Like I think part of it's the mechanics. Just tweaking it a bit, doing that shooting more will help him a lot. Defensively, obviously, he plays really well. One thing that he doesn't do for being a good defender, he doesn't really block shots or get a lot of steals, which is odd because he defends well and he's in the right places, but doesn't pick up those box score fillers, so to speak. Not a great guy as far as going through contact. So he's a good ball handler, but when he gets in the lane, contact's going to bother him a bit. But I watched him a lot of the combine. He played well in 5-on-5, and one thing that really stood out to me is something I already mentioned: grabbing the rebound and running the floor and being able to see, okay, you know, who's open, cutting to the basket, on the wings, things like that. Whenever there's an opportunity to get out and go, you don't have to worry about getting the ball to somebody else because he can do that. He can handle the ball. And late in the second round, I think he could be a really good value pick. All of these guys, best case scenario, I guess not best case scenario because who knows, careers go every which direction. But I think, they could all turn out to be really solid contributing role players on good teams. And so that's something that when you're a second round player, you might not be going very high. But I think what you hope for is, all right, I hope I get picked up by a good team because I think I can contribute. And when you're winning, it's easier to stick around. Like when teams are losing, it's like, all right, get rid of every, like, we're not winning. Get rid of everybody. We don't need these guys. We want to start over. But if you're on a winning team, you kind of find a place to stick and you kind of stick around.
Now, of the seven guys we went over, like the three that we're projecting to the second round, the four international prospects, who do you think has the most like breakout potential? Not that that's necessarily what you're always thinking in the second or later rounds or if they go undrafted, but who do you think has the most potential to be like a star?
I'll probably say Hamidou Diallo.
That doesn't surprise me. And that's kind of the direction that I thought we were going on just because it seems like he's got more of the pedigree just in terms of the projection,
absolutely,
the school, the skills, the raw talent. That doesn't terribly surprise me.
Yeah. I think Diallo for a second choice. That's tough. I think Carter plays such a rugged style that he's not really star, quote-unquote, material or, like, breakout material. I'll say Jean and Musa just because he's a scorer, and scoring stands out. And so that's what I'll go with.
Okay, and then in terms of the kid who you think most likely he never does anything of any consequence in the NBA.
I will go with one of the two draft and stash names. Just, I won't pick the guy that played on Barcelona too, because that's kind of mean, right?
He's already
kinda
had
obvious.
A rough
I'll
year.
Say Isaac Bonga, because the thought seems to be that he won't be ready right away. And so with that, I'll just say that he's one of those potential guys that never pans out, because we see that so often. You look up and the guy's bounced around playing international. Like he was in the NBA for a year or two, G League for a year, and then he's played in Puerto Rico and every international country and just never found his way. So I think I'll say Isaac Bonga.
All right. Now, I know next week we'll probably go back to the top of the draft, talk about which impact players we think are there and all of that.
Maybe we could do like a mock draft, like a week before, like how we think it'll go, something like that. But either way, like you said.
Absolutely. But before we get to that, I wanted to ask you about one more thing, because I've been fascinated by this as well, and I don't feel like we've spent a whole ton of time on him. Is The Ringer just had an article out about Miles Bridges and how he's the most forgotten prospect in this draft.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
And I am fascinated because I think we've fallen into that trap as well, in that this is a kid who's like a legit potential top 10 pick. Last year, he was a legit potential top 10 pick. He comes from a humongous basketball program in Michigan State. Why not more hype behind him?
That's an interesting question, because the hype or the projection is still the lottery. So I guess it just
But it doesn't feel
I'm just like racking my brain thinking, like, you know what? I really haven't heard his name. But like, look, like, let's the Ringer, for example, has him going eighth to Cleveland. That's pretty high. Like, that's where he would have gone last year. And the hype around him even last year, I feel like, was a bit higher. Maybe because he played such a different style last year, like a lot more dunks and things like that. Because this year he was like a lot like a ball stopper, like a lot of catch and shoot, just where he was forced to play. But that's really interesting because he's just sort of sat there. Like 6 to 8 has really been his range ever since, I mean, mock drafts started to come out. And he's kind of sat comfortably. But nobody's talking about him. I think he could be a really successful rookie. And so I guess the reason I would give is because there's so much more at the top to talk about. Like Luka Doncic, the best international prospect ever. We'll just go down the list. You know, Michael Porter Jr., the back injury. Is he going to be okay? Trae Young, the most polarizing college basketball player. Like Mo Bamba, his shot looks better. Like he could be, the next so-and-so or whatever. I think maybe that has something to do with it.
But even guys behind him, like, for example, let's just take our discussions, and we're not alone in feeling this way. I mean, we've talked way more about, you know, Sexton, Gilgeous-Alexander, Knox, Williams. That's kind of a hate thing with you, I know. But we've talked
Take him in the top 20.
We talk way more about those people than somebody who...
Yeah.
Miles Bridges could easily go ahead of all of those players.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Maybe it's... We talked about him a lot last year, and so people already know. I don't know. I mean, that's a really interesting question because... Like I said, he's still going to go top 10. I mean, he should.
And yeah.
He could be one of the best, could be the quote, I think he could be the quote unquote Donovan Mitchell of this class.
He's
find a good situation to succeed.
Him and Mikal Bridges, they might be the most ready-made players coming out of the gate. And I feel like a team that takes in the top 10, 11, 12 might be bummed when they hear his name. And I'm like, you shouldn't be.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just really, now I'm really intrigued by that. I
want
to just start going asking all the people I know that like are draft nerds like me, like, hey, why did we stop talking about him? Because now that you
asked
me.
He's a good player.
Yeah, because I don't know. And
he's a really good player.
You know, Michigan State flamed out really, poorly in the tournament. But
yeah, it could have been worse. Could have been what happened off court.
Now don't put Miles Bridges in that. Like, don't throw
his
name.
No, I'm saying at least he stayed above the fray, except for like his lying head coach. But it's whatever.
Jeez.
Sorry. Oh, too far?
No.
Come on.
No, I'm just like, Miles Bridges seems like a good guy. But
I know, that's what I'm saying.
But anyway, they flamed out in the tournament. He, I think, had a okay year as far as what he was expected to do. You know, people thought he might be player of the year, this, that, and the other, and he just wasn't.
Yeah.
So I think there's something to that, but an interesting question because it really is curious because I remember when he put his name back in the college discussion, like I'm going back to school. I remember like tweeting something like next year, like I'll be all in on Miles Bridges. And I am. I really like him, but we haven't talked about
it. Yeah. Well, next week we'll go back to the top of the draft and see if we can throw some more love Miles Bridges way. Lord knows we'll throw it Mikal Bridges way. All right. Anything else that you want to add in there as we close in on the draft?
I guess just, the next 2 weeks, a lot of fun. Workouts. I mean, we can talk about this more, but the Mavericks are going to work out Wendell Carter. That's the rumor.
Hey, we did a segment
that
I said, if you're considering Michael Porter Jr., you really should be considering Wendell Carter.
So interesting things like that, like who are teams working out? Are there going to be any surprises? Are we going to see, more rumblings of trades? There's a lot to follow in the next 2 weeks. It's going to be a lot of fun. Definitely excited. Like I said, the excitement level right now is an 8, and by then it might be a 10. I'm not giving anything away.
What would your excitement level be for the Mavericks swapping number 5 to Boston for 27 and Jaylen Brown, and then them taking that 27th pick, the number 14 pick that they get from the Nuggets for picking up Kenneth Faried, packaging that to move back up in the draft and taking Wendell Carter? So you come away with Jaylen Brown and Wendell Carter for the Mavs.
I don't get it. What happened to the number five pick?
Like they traded it to Boston for Jalen Brown.
Oh, right.
That was the beginning of it.
So I got lost in the back half. I wouldn't do it. I want the number five pick. And if Boston wants that number five pick, they got to give me more than 27 and Jalen Brown. That's just the way I look at it.
Wow. Jalen Brown's awesome.
Yeah, but I mean, I look at the Mavs having the leverage there. Like, if Boston wants it, you got to overpay for it. So give me a first-round pick next year. That's just me.
Okay.
I might be on the minority
there. And then they'll say the hell with you and move on to a team in front of us.
Right.
Stupid Boston has so many assets. All right. For Nick Nefik, I've been Kevin Hagland. You can also catch me on the KNC Masterpiece at KNC1053 on Twitter, 7 to 11 Central. On 105.3 The Fan or the TuneIn app. And until next week, I got nothing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.